From the San Francisco Bay Area, it's time for Live from the Bay with Joey. Stay tuned.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Live from the Bay with Joey. Tonight we have a really interesting and exciting show because we have an L.A.-based actor, writer, producer, Jim Pittock, is with us. So we're going to be talking to Jim rather shortly here. In the meantime, I want to make sure that you continue to listen in. We've got some interesting December shows right around the holidays, so be sure to listen in. Also, if you haven't had a chance to listen to the Elvis Conspiracy 1 and 2, you definitely want to listen to that. I know that episode 2 received quite a bit of feedback there, and so if you have a chance, be sure to listen to it. So, again, thank you for joining us. Joining us tonight is Jim Pittock. Let me tell you just a little bit about Jim. I'm sure you know who he is, but once you see his face, and obviously we've got a picture of him there on the show page. But Jim is an actor, writer, producer who began his career on the stage in England. He made his theatrical debut in the U.S. in The Boy's Own Story. He gained the attention of the New York theater scene. And then in 1982, he was cast in Noel Coward's Present Laughter by George C. Scott, which also featured actors such as Nathan Lane, Christina Lattie, Dana Ivey, and Kate Burton. He soon was seen on off-Broadway shows, including the original U.S. production of Noises Off, The Knack, The Roundabout Theater, and Make and Break with Peter Falk at the Kennedy Center. He has since appeared in a long succession of TV shows, such as The Tracy Ullman Show, Coach, Max Headroom, The Twilight Zone, Murder, She Wrote, Mad About You, Angel, ER, Friends, etc., etc. And he also thinks he's part of the royal family, so we need to talk to him about that. Jim, are you there?
Hello. Good evening.
Hello.
Welcome.
Yes, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Thank you for joining us. You're in Southern California. See, I'm in here in the San Francisco Bay Area, so you're in Southern California, correct? Like around Los Angeles?
I am. I live in the Hollywood Hills.
Oh, nice. And how's your weather there? Is it cold? It's probably not cold. See, we have some cold weather right now, but I would assume that you don't have too much cold weather out there, right?
Well, it's a little crisp. You know, it's around 68, 70 degrees today, but it was lovely, beautiful, clear day.
Uh-huh. And you consider that crisp, 68 or 70?
That's really bad, isn't it?
Because in the morning it is crisp. Uh-huh.
It is crisp.
But you're originally from London, right? England?
Yes.
And it's rather crisp there,
damp.
Isn't it?
It's no, it's damp. Never crisp. It's just damp and cold and horrible.
Okay. Now, have you've been, obviously, you started your career when you came out from, let's talk about that. When you came out from England and you started really here in America, did you not start right in San Francisco in the Bay Area?
I did, yeah. I did. It was, as you said, my first show was doing the one-man show at the Julian Theater in San Francisco, and it was fortunately very successful, and that impetus from that took me to tour it in the U.S. and then to New York, and I after that was in a succession of Broadway shows.
Mm. Now, give us an idea. You came, so tell the listeners, you arrived in San Francisco about what year was that?
1981.
And then in about 1982, you were cast in Noel Coward's Present Laughter, is that correct?
Correct, yeah. I was about a year in San Francisco. I actually lived in Berkeley the first few months, and then I lived in Knob Hill in a basement there. But yeah, I was about a year in the Bay Area.
And do you come back to the Bay Area every once in a while? Do you come visit?
Oh yeah, I for my sins became a rabid Oakland A's fan in my time there. And being someone of loyal instincts, I've stuck with them since then. I'll come up occasionally to watch games. And I have friends still up there, so I love coming up to Northern California.
So what area do you like the best? Come on now.
What area in the world? In the world?
No, not in the world, in the San Francisco Bay Area.
I love parts of Marin County are terrific. I always liked Berkeley. I enjoyed living in right in the middle of, I lived on Pine and Taylor in the middle of the city. I just think it's all great. I mean, it's a beautiful place to live.
Yep. Well, we just want to applaud you on that one. Thank you very much. So,
yeah. And by the way, I think L.A. is a beautiful place to live. I think it gets a very bad rap, and I know there's a lot of snobbery from Northern California and New York about L.A., but it's L.A. is a collection of mini cities, and each and every one of them has a different character. And some are horrible and some are great.
Absolutely. Well, now, do you think we're a bit of snobs when we talk about Southern California? Really, honestly?
Well, I think there's more snobbery from New York. There's more kind of rivalry from Northern California. I didn't hear too many people in Northern California say much nice about L.A. But it was less about snobbery and more just probably kind of rivalry.
Yeah. You know, I think it's just two different worlds. You know what I'm saying, Jim? I mean, I think that here in Northern California, we're very much more attuned, more, I think we have more in common maybe, akin to, say, for instance, Oregon and Washington. I would say, you know, even our terrain is more, you know, more like the Pacific Northwest, more so than we are Southern California. You know, well, we're not in Southern California, but definitely it looks different. Southern California,
yeah.
Right? You have
areas.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, talk yourself into it, yeah.
Well,
Napa Valley, Sonoma is exactly the same as Santa Barbara County, and the wine districts there are indistinguishable. So I don't know if that's true.
Now, do you consider, is Santa Barbara, Santa Barbara can be considered central California.
Well, not really,
right?
Southern California. Santa Barbara is so close to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And Santa Inez Valley is so close. That's definitely Southern California. I don't think you hit Central California until you get up to sort of the kind of Carmels or San Simeon. That's really central.
Mm-hmm.
But who am I to give you a geography lesson?
I know. Well, you know, I mean, it's always interesting on people's take. You know, some people do not consider the San Francisco Bay Area Northern California. And,
really?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard people going, oh, no, that's the Bay Area. You know, Northern California doesn't start till, and I'm like, oh, my God, what planet are you from? And then a lot of people think that Santa Barbara is central, you know, central California, as is San Simeon, you know, towards the south, but it's still considered central. And, you know, everybody's got their own, their own take. I have some family that lives down in Templeton, and that's going towards San Luis Obispo. And, you know, I consider that, even though it is central coast, I consider that heading towards Southern California, you know. But I love Southern California. There's areas of Southern California that I really do like quite a bit. I like Hermosa Beach quite a bit. I like, you know, there's places in that area that are absolutely beautiful. So I think you live in a great place. So kudos to you. So let's talk a little bit about your career. So basically from that point, after you did Present Laughter, then when you moved to L.A., you started to pursue, really, your career in television, correct?
Yeah, once I sort of spent 3 years in New York doing nonstop theater. I mean, I think I was pretty much on stage the entire time I was there, eight shows a week, and I kind of burnt out. Mm-hmm. So I moved out to L.A. and wanted to make the transition into television and film. And around that time, I also started writing because I had more time on my hands. And it was sort of, that was a dual thing that I've done ever since.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about this writing. Where is that taking you to? I mean, I think that people would be interested in finding that out because not all, you know, of course, not all actors are writers, right? And so what made you decide to go that route as well?
Well, I had time on my hands, you know, and I always wanted to write. I knew I could write. And I wrote a screenplay, in 1988, 89, I don't know, and it sold for a lot of money, and suddenly I was a screenwriter. And for most of the 90s, I was probably, you know, most of my income was from writing, and I was taken very seriously as a writer. And then I did Best in Show with Christopher Guest, and suddenly people remembered I was also an actor. So, yeah, I've written films, I've written television, I've written every genre pretty much except science fiction. I continue to write almost every day on some level.
Well, that's awesome. You know, I also am an actor and singer and songwriter, and I write. I'm not always very proficient about. I'm not always good at writing all the time. So I'm more of, especially when I'm writing music songs, I'm more of somebody that writes out of inspiration. However, about 3 years ago, I started to write a short, it's going to be a short film. And, you know, I don't know if this happens to you, but I started writing it and I got really into it. And then, you know, I went back and I read it again and I'm like, okay, well, this is obvious to many people that write. You know, you're going to change things. There's things that you don't like, et cetera. You can even change the name of I've changed the name of the short film quite a few times. But, you know, in going back, I look at it now, and I'm still holding it till the right time that we film. It just, to me, is not right, the right time yet. But I go back, and I'm like, you know, I don't like this, and I'm going to take this out. Does that ever happen to you when you've written, like, screenplays, what have you? Do you write, and then you just say, you know what, I don't like this, I'm going to rewrite this, or... I mean, do you spend a certain amount of time on a project and you say, you know, this is it, this is finito, this is the end result, and you don't go back and do any changes? I mean, I'm wondering how – everybody's a little bit different.
I go back on everything. I mean, I never stop. It's a living, breathing thing, something you write, and it's never really – you never stop until it's actually filmed. So there are certain projects that I have on the shelf that I look at and I go, you know what, this isn't worth reviving because I don't think I can get this made or it'll sell. But otherwise, I'm always looking. I mean, I had a screenplay made in 2005 with Samuel Jackson and Eugene Levy. I think I started that 17 years before that film got made. It's part and parcel of being a... certainly you're a screenwriter as you just rewrite as much as you write.
Yeah, you rewrite all the time. Now, let's talk about that writing. You know, Family Tree, that was something I understand you wrote, correct?
Yeah, I wrote it with Christopher Guest. It was a television series that we did this, it was shown this year, but we shot it last year and the beginning of this year. That was, an idea that we came up with, and we didn't think it was a film, so we wanted to do it as a television series. We felt it was much better served having episodes. Mm-hmm. And, we spent 6 months writing that, and then another 6 months shooting it, really.
So now I understand. I guess that, you know, Family Tree wasn't a huge ratings winner for HBO, but I assume now people... are discovering it because it's now on DVD, right? Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. It's out on DVD.
And, you know, that's kind of interesting to me because, you know, there's a lot of times, like I remember when Seinfeld first came out, I couldn't stand that show. I didn't like it. I found it really kind of ridiculous. And then later on, it was quite funny after, you know, went off the air, et cetera, I saw all these, I saw it on DVD. And before I ever started watching it, you know, watching my TV on reruns, and I got the DVDs, and then I started, you know, I thought, you know what, I really like this, and now I'll watch it on reruns. It's just the most bizarre thing. I don't know how that works, but it's like when it was on.
Takes a little time to acquire, you know, and now luckily we've got things like Netflix and various places where you can actually discover shows after the fact.
Right.
You know, we did 8 episodes. We got probably the best reviews that HBO's had for a comedy in 10 to 15 years.
Oh, is that right?
Across the board, no question. The ratings were ho-hum, not great, not shocking.
Right.
They were okay. It didn't cause a massive splash. It was on at a time people didn't know about it particularly. But it got a very, very, very hardcore, rabid fan base. And this was a show that clearly could have built and would have built and may still build, but it's not going to be with HBO, so it'll be with somewhere else.
Right. And I think you touched on... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's insane not to give a show, you know, at least 2 or 3 seasons to, or 2 seasons when you're doing just 8 to let it breathe, you know, and especially something that got such a positive reaction. I mean, if it was met with kind of a mediocre response or a bad response, yeah, you know, move on. Let's all go home. But this show was a hit. I mean, it was a bona fide critical hit. And it's sort of fairly stunning to me that that we're actually now trying to find a home for it. And we may not.
But, you know, I think you tapped on something that's really important. I think placing... You can have a great show and you place it at the wrong time slot, it could be disastrous.
Yeah.
And I know even on radio here, when we first started this show, the time frame that we used, the time period, was huge for us. And we, you know, it was very, I mean, right out the gate, we were very successful. And then I decided, for whatever reason, I was going to change the time. And we did that. And even though it still was featured, the listening audience dropped a little because of the time, you know, the time that I was picking. And if it's not placed in the right time frame, then what happens is you can lose your audience, and it can be the best show on earth, and you're losing people. You're not, and that it's really kind of unfortunate. But, I mean, the great thing here is that you're going to be able to pick up some people that might not have had a chance to hear about it or see it, and it's out on DVD, and maybe you will get a new home for it. So that's kind of exciting.
Yep.
Now, how did you start working with this Christopher Guest? Do you go far back?
We go back to Best in Show, which came out in 2000. That's my first experience where I was cast with Fred Willard as the two commentators. And then I did Mighty Wind and For Your Consideration, again, just as an actor. And and we sort of stayed in touch, and Chris knew that I was a writer also. And he sort of, you know, asked me about this particular subject matter of someone investigating their family tree, and I thought it was a great TV idea, and we started trying to see if we could write together, and it, you know, we'd meet once, twice a week at the most, and just played around for a few months, and then we kicked it into gear once we realized we had something and came up with a show, and it was a very smooth and organic process. You know, I'm sure we'll probably do something else again.
So now, for the listeners, I do understand that it's out on DVD, but can you let them know how, if in case that they're interested in seeing this or getting a copy of that DVD, DVD, how they might be able to do that?
Well, wherever you get DVDs, I'm sure you can get it on Amazon, wherever, online. You can probably download it. You know, are there any video stores left anymore? I'm sure there are, but I don't know.
There are some.
Yeah, it's out. It's downloadable. It's on DVD. It's great value. It's 8 episodes which complete the season, and it has an arc of its own. They're not all isolated. There is a whole kind of through line, and then there's some great DVD extras. You know, scenes that were deleted scenes. And if you know about how we work, these are very, very detailed outlines. But then the show the actors actually improvise around that. So it's kind of like Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's a very, very kind of structured and detailed in terms of story and character and situation and some suggestions of jokes and beats and the scenes. But the actual dialogue, the actors get to say themselves and improvise on the spot. So it's a very kind of realistic feel to it.
Awesome. Now, it was set both in London and America, is that correct?
Yeah, first 4 episodes are in England. The second 4 are in America. He comes to America to pursue a line of his American family, their cousins in America.
So if you're looking back on it, do you think, let's look back some of those episodes. What do you think worked better, the ones that were set in London or the ones that were set in America?
I think they all work. I mean, there was never any question, and the show was reviewed in this country on basis of the first 4 episodes, which was just England, and the reviews, as I said, were extraordinary. I actually think the back 4 are even better, and generally that was the opinion, that the show just got stronger and stronger and stronger. But they're so individual, and so each story is so different. That I think you can enjoy it from any perspective. I mean, the first episode is mostly set up. It really does set the table. And then it really kicks off in episode 2. But I think, you know, it would be wrong of me to say one works better than the other, because I know some people prefer the English ones and some that prefer the American. But I basically would say that the show just got stronger and stronger.
Now, since doing that, did you get interested in looking up your own family tree as a result of being involved in that show?
My brother's done extensive searching throughout my own genealogy. I'm not particularly interested in mine. I'm of a passing interest. To me, and why I was interested in the series is, to me, the myth is as interesting as the fact. I love the stories that people, you know, we've always heard that, and people's building up in their own mind what they are related to and who they're from and why that makes them who they are. But I find that as interesting and as funny and intriguing as the actual sort of doing of it. I mean, yeah, it'd be fun to do, to have someone do that, but I mean, for someone who's very disciplined and hardworking, that's somewhere I could say I'd be very lazy. If someone else did it, I'd be thrilled and I'd go along with it and enjoy it, but it's not something I'd spend time and energy doing.
Now, did you say that one of your family members pursued that a little bit? Did they?
Yeah, my brother did, yeah, so I know an awful lot, you know.
What did he find out?
A couple of episodes of Family Tree have certain things from my family in there, and that's, you know, again, it's, to me, it's the you know, there was a whole thing in our family that my grandfather had a vaudeville act with Charlie and Chaplin and Sid Chaplin, and then Chaplin came here, and that my grandfather was offered contracts twice and turned them down because he had various other commitments in England that were, you know, family related and just all that stuff. And I, whether it's true or not, and I think it probably is, I think it's just great. I love all that. I love all that myth. That the hope that it's true is very amusing to me.
I'm just wondering how, did you ever talk to your brother about how he went about doing this? I mean,
He did it the usual way, you know. I mean, the Mormons have all the records.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And then there's parish records in England. He went quite far back.
Yeah.
you know, and well, our family originally came from France and to England, and the family name was actually different. The truth is that some of us have interesting things there. Most of us don't. Everybody thinks that they're related to Cleopatra or Napoleon, and they're not. You know,
they're
not.
I
happen to be, but that's just a very rare exception.
Oh, wow.
My mother's side is Napoleon, and my father's side is Cleopatra.
I will tell you one thing. I've done. I'm actually my grandparents on both sides immigrated. One side came from Spain, the other came over from Italy. And interesting, I've done DNA where they test your DNA and they can go back and tell you where your family originated from.
Well, Africa, I can tell you that.
For yourself or for me?
No, for you. You would have come from Africa. Everybody did. We all came from Africa.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it wasn't showing that. It was just showing different places that were matches in Europe, and then probably some other places throughout the world, and maybe Africa. But that didn't show up initially. But it was really quite interesting. But the thing that I found interesting was growing up on my Italian side, my father's mother's maiden name was Pacelli, and as you know, most Italian and Spanish people are Roman Catholic. My family actually converted, 90% of them converted to being Protestants. So you could imagine, when I tell people that I was raised in a Protestant church, they're like, but you're Italian and Spanish, how does that happen? But what I was telling you, you were talking about people thinking that they're related to so-and-so. I always heard that my grandmother, my Italian grandmother, was first cousins with Pope Pius XII, which actually was true. Eugenio Pacelli was her first cousin from, you know. So it is kind of interesting when you find out things about your history, you know.
Absolutely. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. So, although, you know, that doesn't mean anything to me because I'm not Roman Catholic, but it is interesting and it's kind of fun. So I'm always intrigued by stuff like that, genealogy. And so anyway, I hope folks get out there and get copies of this set. I mean, it's eight episodes, you said. Is that correct?
Yes, eight episodes.
Yeah. So let's go on to some other things before we wrap it up here. You're shooting another did you just get finished shooting another TV show called The Royals, and what can you tell us about that?
I did, yes. I was just over in England for 3 weeks doing that in October.
Mm-hmm.
It's E! Entertainment Channel's first foray into scripted show. It's an hour drama written by the creator of One Tree Hill, which is a show I wasn't familiar with. And it's basically the sort of idea that the modern royal family is rethinking things. So if you imagine House of Cards, that kind of drama set in the royal family, the monarchy, it's the king who's deciding to maybe abolish the monarchy, and the queen and the king's brother plotting against him. So it's very Shakespearean. It's a drama. And we'll see whether that materializes into a series, but I think there's a very good chance.
Well, it sounds like a series. I mean, The Royals. And then your part in that was what?
I played the king's kind of right-hand man, valet, mm-hmm. right-hand man,
mm-hmm.
Who sort of knows where all the skeletons are buried.
Mm. Now, is it actually I just don't want to seem confused here, but so I understand this correctly, is it supposed to be like more modern day?
Oh, it's totally modern day. Yes.
Okay, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess how much of the characters that are in this are based on real life characters today?
None at all.
Ah.
No. I mean, if you imagine, you know, House of Cards was about, you know, prime minister or in the president in this case, you know, in the U.S. Mm-hmm. version, and or aspiring senator, and mm-hmm. that was not based on it. It was just a fictitious, you know, mm-hmm. modern day.
Mm-hmm. So were any of the scenes, did you do any outdoor scenes around any of the castles or anything
yes,
of that
yeah,
sort?
We filmed at Blenheim Palace. We filmed at two or three places, Somersley, Wilton House, just a lot of the great old places. Beautiful.
Oh, how awesome is that? So now when will that, do you have any idea when that will be shown?
I don't, because I really was just an actor on that. I'm not involved in the whole production schedule. My guess is that they're editing now. I'm doing some ADR, I think, next
mm-hmm.
week
mm-hmm.
for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think that they'll make a decision on it probably by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess, or early in January.
Right. Well, you know, Jim, thank you so much for telling us about that. You know, I know you've been in some really major films over the years, like Independence Day, Lethal Weapon 2. Did you have a favorite that you've been in or the best experience that you've had?
Yeah, I've had so many great experiences making. I love, you know, working. The two films that I always tell people I'm sort of proudest of as an actor are Best in Show, which is, you know, a lot of people's favorite kind of
mm-hmm.
Christopher Guest movie. And there was a small independent film I did called See This Movie, which played the art house circuit and won some awards. And it's a really fun film with Seth Meyers, John Cho, Jesslyn Gelsig, Jessica Paré, and myself. And it's, in terms of my role, that was, I kind of really enjoy watching that because it was so outrageous. And it's a fun little film. So
mm-hmm.
so those two, from an acting point of view, I would recommend.
Mm-hmm. Now, you are British, isn't that correct?
I am.
I
yes,
do a terrible. I cannot talk like somebody that's British. I have a hard time doing that, but especially around British people. But it's an awesome accent. But now, what do you consider home? Is England really home, or is the United States home for you, or is it like 50-50?
I've lived in Los Angeles for 30 years almost, so that's
mm-hmm.
well over half my life, well
mm-hmm.
over. So mm-hmm. I would say Los Angeles is my home.
Mm-hmm.
My birthplace, where I grew up, is in England, and I go back there, and I'm very comfortable there, and I have family there. But,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, I think that's, in the last 10 years, that's become very clear to me that my home is here.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter lives here. She was born here, and
mm-hmm.
this is my home now. I've chosen to make this my home.
Do we talk funny to you?
No, not at all. I'm
really?
So used to it now. I don't, you know, my daughter's, you know, all her friends say, oh, God, your dad has such an interesting, you know, British accent. And
mm-hmm.
she sort of say, how do you mean? She just doesn't even hear it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, no, I'm certainly not aware of it, English or American. I mean, I'm aware of it, but I don't think anybody talks funny, except Eastern Europeans, and that's just a whole other thing.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to me because now you wouldn't say there's nowhere in the United States any of the accents that you heard from different states that would be more more in line with maybe the English that one would hear in England, huh? Probably not.
No, I mean, there's certain colloquialisms, there's certain things. There's supposedly a place, an island off Louisiana where they speak very similarly to Shakespearean English. I think in the South you hear certain things that are close to certain regional things in England, but no, not really. I mean, the language is so complex, the way it evolves and accents.
Mm-hmm.
It's too difficult to pin it down and sort of make it pat.
Now, interestingly, I understand you perfectly. I have no problem in understanding your, you know, because sometimes for American people, it's difficult to to understand some people that come from England, or they have, because there's different, obviously there's different words, there's different sayings, but I don't have a problem, interestingly, I don't have a problem with the English accent. I don't have a problem, for the most part, with the Irish, even the Irish brogue. However, and people from Wales, I don't have a problem with. However, what seems to be an issue with me is when I hear people, like say three-quarters of the Scottish people that I've met, I really struggle. And in fact, my cousin's boyfriend at one time, she had this boyfriend that was from Scotland, and they met while they were in Spain. And I could not understand him for the life of me. I could not understand his English. And so I would finally have to just say to him, Nick, would you mind, you know, telling me what you're going to tell me in Spanish? Go ahead, and because he spoke Spanish fluently as well. And so then he would speak to me in Spanish. I could not understand his – isn't that weird? I just couldn't get it. Now, there's that comedian host on television – I think he's absolutely hysterical. What is his name? He's, Craig
Ferguson.
Oh, yeah, I think he's hysterical. But you know what? I don't have a problem with his – I can understand him. His accent to me is not that strong for somebody from Scotland, but some Scottish accents are really – I don't know what
it
is.
Yeah, I think any you could find an Irish or a Welsh or anyone that's, if it's a strong dialect, it's impossible. You know, the people from the south here, you know, sort of South Carolina or North Carolina, you literally it's impossible to understand a word for anybody. And then there's other people that speak very, very clearly. So I think it depends on the strength of the regional accent.
You mean when people are talking like this, you don't understand?
Well, yeah, that's understandable. It's the kind of mumbling the whole thing. We're going to hear and what's going on there and here. That it's, you know, it's just noise.
Yeah,
happens with lots of different dialects, British, you know, or American.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a nice accent, whatever it is. So, anyway, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Would you please let the listeners know, in case, you know, because there's going to be people that are obviously interested in getting a hold of you, and should they want to follow you and get on your website and all that, and just keep abreast to what's happening with Jim Pidock, can you let them know how they can go ahead and reach you?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at @RealJimPiddock. That's my Twitter name. And I have a website, www.jimpiddock.com. So that would be good.
Now, let's go back real quick, Jim. Real quick, let's just clarify something. On the Twitter, is it real, spelled R-E-A-L or R-E-E-L?
Oh, very good. R-E-A-L,
thank you.
Real, as in the real thing.
Uh-huh. But that makes you want to change your Twitter, doesn't it?
Yeah.
My little take on that, yeah. Huh? Anyway,
well,
it's been
close to my name.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for taking time to join us from the San Francisco Bay Area, where you actually really started when you came out here to the United States. So, again, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. And, folks, again, if you want to follow up with Jim, he did give you the information. And definitely, you know, you can always Google him as well. That's always a real quick and easy way to get information on anybody, right? And then obviously on our show page, we have all the information. So again, we want to thank Jim for joining us. I want to thank you for joining us. Be sure you listen, continue listening in, folks, and especially in December as we have some special programs coming your way for the holiday. So till the next time, this is Joey saying take care, and we'll be talking to you soon.